Hey guys, and welcome to the world of Aja Pearl. It's my world, and I am so happy you're here. Tonight, we continue with the book, Chalice, the Book of Life. Once again, you can find this book on Amazon, on all markets around the world. You can find it on BookBub and Walmart online. It is only available online at Walmart. If you are interested, please get a copy of my book entitled Chalice, the Book of Life by Aja Pearl. And I hope you enjoy it. So tonight we continue with chapter 3. And it starts off with a reading of the book of Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31 to 32. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be ye kind one to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. When Sabine gets off the elevator, she walks through her apartment like any ordinary day. She fetches her keys from her purse and proceeds to open the door. When Sabine opens the door, she immediately goes into her apartment and locks the door behind her. Before walking any further, she stops dead in her tracks and scans the apartment. There is silence. Total silence. Sabine feels a slight chill overcoming her. It is not the temperature, but a haunting spirit of loneliness. She crosses her arms to keep herself warm, looking around the house with slight fear. The silence itself was as high as a loud noise. But she quickly snaps out of it, unfolds her hands, and proceeds to the bedroom. When she enters the bedroom, she immediately removes her makeup and changes her clothes to a t-shirt and sweatpants. Then she goes into the kitchen to cook. Sabine begins to gather ingredients, pots, pans, and cooking utensils. Cooking always makes Sabine feel better. Cooking is her first love and her passion. Sabine mixes, measures, preheats, etc. When the food is finally prepared, Sabine feels accomplished and proud. Then she makes herself a plate, places it on the dining room table with a glass of water and a fork and a knife. When the food is finally prepared on the plate, Sabine gathers her eating utensils and sits down to eat. After blessing her meal, she cuts a small piece from her meat. When Sabine brings the portion of food to her mouth, Sabine realizes something incredibly disturbing. She unknowingly prepared balsamic pork chops, mashed sweet potatoes, and vegetable medley. This was her late husband's favorite meal. She is so petrified, Sabine drops the fork on the plate. She gets up out of her chair and quickly backs away from the table. No, she says in shock. No, this bastard won't leave me alone. Then Sabine screams, get out of here, Nevin. Go back to your gay lover and burn in hell. She picks up the plate and throws it across the room. The food and the plate splatter all over the dining room. She is heavily panting and shaking with anger. Sabine takes a look at her hands and notices her hands are shaking. I need a cigarette, Sabine says to herself, rushing to the kitchen in a panic. She hastily goes into the kitchen and to find her pack of cigarettes. Sabine is having trouble finding her pack of cigarettes because she cannot remember where she put them. Sabine looks in her drawers, in the cabinets, on top of the cabinets, and on top of the refrigerator. So, you want to fucking punishment, do you? Sabine says, as if she's talking to Nevin, increasingly getting angry. It's not going to work. You're a loser. You and that fairy of yours are losers. Sabine continues to search for her cigarettes until she stumbles upon the bread box. She opens the bread box and finds them leaning on the loaf of bread, which is wrapped in plastic. Without hesitation, Sabine grabs her pack of cigarettes and pulls one out of the package. Her hands are still shaking. She is unable to light the cigarette with her hand. So she puts it in her mouth and leans to the eye of the stove to light it. After it is lit, Sabine turns off the eye, takes a couple of puffs until she stands straight to her feet. Shaking slightly, Sabine takes the cigarette between her quivering fingers to take a deep inhale. She then releases the cigarette from her lips to release a massive cloud of smoke. Sabine feels a little bit better. "You can't outfox this fox," she says with a slight laugh, as if Nevin was in the room. She puts the rest of the cigarettes pack in her pocket and walks proudly into the living room. However, before Sabine makes herself comfortable on the love seat, she almost forgets to get an ashtray. So she goes back into the kitchen to retrieve an ashtray. Then a deep masculine voice calls to her name. "Sabine. Sabine," the voice calls to her. "Who's there?" Sabine asks in fear. "Nevin, where are you, you bastard? Show yourself." It's not Nevin. When Sabine turns around, she could not believe who was standing in front of her. She's in shock. Sabine shakes her head in total disbelief. She hesitantly makes a sign of the cross. It is Malcolm Montague Sr. "No, it can't be," she exclaims. "Why do you look like that? Now, is that any way to talk to your father? Daddy? Is that you?" "Well, not really. I'm your daddy's spirit." After taking a long drag from her cigarette, she asks, "So what do you want from me? My soul?" "No, that would be death," her father's spirit replies. "Don't be afraid, darling. I came to help you. I came to warn you." "Warn me?" she asks, tapping the ash of her cigarette into the sink. "Yes. I have watched you for a time now, and I'm not happy with your behavior." "I haven't done anything," Sabine replies arrogantly, taking another drag from her cigarette. He shakes his head in shame. "What?" Sabine asks. Mr. Montague's ghost sighs and says, "I blame myself for the woman you are. I failed you." Sabine laughs and asks, "You did not fail me because I turned out great. I have everything going for me." "Yes, except love." "Oh, please. I am loved by many people." "Then why are you alone? Why are you not with your mother's house with the rest of the family and friends?" "I choose to be alone, okay? Anyway, my mother and my brothers didn't love me. They still don't love me. I wouldn't be surprised to know that they're jealous of me because you love me. You show me love every day." "Sabine, my baby girl, I loved my family. I loved my wife, and I loved all of my children. But I spoiled you. I spoiled you rotten. Your mother and I would argue over the way I disciplined you." "But you hardly disciplined me." "Exactly. Maybe if I didn't show favoritism and treated you and your brothers equally, maybe Nevin would still be alive." "Yeah. Yeah. Alive with his gay lover," Sabine retorts, taking another drag from her cigarette. "Well, I don't know about that. However, I do know that Nevin was a good man. And he loved you enough to marry you and to have a family with you. But that wasn't good enough for you. And that's the reason he left." "I didn't make him go anywhere. He left on his own. You drove him away. Lies." He may not have worked the best job, making minimum wage, but he did the best he could for his family. He tried so hard to please you, but you were never satisfied. You bled him dry. He was my husband. He was supposed to treat me like a queen, but you were supposed to return the favor by treating him like a king. I did. I did. I helped pursue his music career, but Nevin always fell flat on his face. Why? He didn't have the guts. Sabine continued, taking another final pull from her cigarette and putting the rest out in the sink. Nevin was nothing but a marshmallow. I tried to mold him into a great man, but it became so damn frustrating. Do you know why it was frustrating? He was already a great man. Sabine smiles and says, "Yeah, and he was great for another man." Malcolm Montague Sr.'s ghost looks at his daughter with sadness. He says, "Well, it looks like the damage is done." What damage? You are at the point of no return. All I ask is for the Lord to have mercy on your soul. Then the ghost disappears. When her father's ghost disappears, Sabine gets an eerie feeling, but it shakes her head in disgust. "Whatever," says Sabine with disgust. She goes to the sink and washes the ash and cigarette butt down the drain. Point of no return. She says to herself, Nevin is at the point of no return. He wasn't the one living in sin. I wasn't the one living in sin. I'm not the one who's dead and burning in hell. When she leaves the kitchen, she is passing the dining room. She happens to see the mess she made with the plate of food. Sabine walks towards the chaos on the floor. Knowing this was Nevin's favorite meal, Sabine shouts, "Why didn't you love me? Why didn't you love me, Nevin? Why couldn't you just love me? Why didn't you stay?" Then Sabine crumbles to the floor, sobbing over the mess on the floor. She repeatedly sobs, "Why, Nevin? Why did you leave me? I loved you." Everyone is mingling, weeping, and eating. The children, including the triplets, play amongst themselves. The process goes for a couple of hours until nightfall, when the guests leave gradually until the home is empty. After the guest is gone, Hyacinth and Malcolm Jr. make preparations in cleaning the living room and the kitchen, while Jabari bathes the children, and sends them to bed. When everything is clean and put back in its place, everyone is exhausted. "Well, looks like everything is back to normal," Hyacinth says, looking at the cleanliness of the living room. "Did you take out the trash?" "Yes, Mama," replies Malcolm Jr. "Did you put the food away for me?" "Yes, Mama." "Good. Hopefully the guests took some food home with them, because all that food is going to go to waste eventually. In that case, could I take some home with me?" "Sure, baby. Help yourself. But Malcolm Jr., please return my Tupperware." "Mama, I always return your Tupperware." "Oh, really? Well, I think I did." "I repeat, return my Tupperware. All of it." "Okay, okay." When Malcolm Jr. makes his way into the kitchen to raid the refrigerator, Hyacinth mentions, "One more thing, MJ." Malcolm Jr. turns to his mother and replies, "Yes, Mama. Clean my Tupperware, please." "Yes, Mama," Malcolm Jr. says, and he went into the kitchen. Hyacinth stands alone in the living room. She looks around to see if there is anything else to clean or out of place. Then she sees a wedding picture of Nevin and Sabine, which stands amongst many of the photos on her shelf. Hyacinth picks up the image and stares at it. She runs her fingers gently over Nevin's picture. "Nevin," Hyacinth says to herself. "My son. Why did you not come to me? I could have helped you, baby." A single tear falls from her face and onto the picture. Suddenly, Malcolm Jr. comes back into the living room. "Well, if you don't need anything else, I'm going home," he says to his mother. "No, baby, I'm fine," Hyacinth says, wiping her eyes. "Right now, I'm going to rest my bones in the chair and watch some television." "Are you okay, Mama? Do you need me to stay?" "No, baby. I'll be fine. Besides, I have Jabari." "Okay. Call me if you need anything." "All right, MJ. And be safe." Malcolm Jr. then leaves his mother's home, locking the door behind him. About 15 minutes later, her other son, Jabari, walks down the stairs to accompany her in the living room. "Mama, the children are finally in bed." "Okay," Hyacinth sighs. "Those poor babies are going through so much," Hyacinth says. "My daughter is going through so much too. Sabine is in no shape to take care of those babies. Maybe I should keep them with me for a while." "Good luck with that. I'm surprised you were able to free those triplets from Sabine's clutches. She needs time to grieve by herself." "Mama." "Yes, baby." "I need to talk to you about something that's really crucial," Jabari says. "Is it about the children?" "Sweetheart, I know it's hard, but please be patient. They buried their father. They just buried their father today. I asked the Lord to give them strength." "No, it's not about them. It's about my friend Zora." "What about Zora?" "You know that she's having a baby, right?" "She is? She's a baby herself. I hope the father plans to take care of her and the baby. I will never understand the reason young people these days want to grow up so fast." I don't know either, but I want to help." "How?" Jabari is hesitant to tell his mother his idea. "Well, Jabari, I want to ask her to marry me." "You want to what?" I want to marry Zora. Hyacinth cannot believe her eyes. Hyacinth cannot believe her ears. "Jabari, today I buried my son-in-law, a man who I loved as if he was my child. I tackle his moderate, emotionally unstable widow. I have his children, who is hopefully sleeping peacefully upstairs despite the loss of their daddy. Now, you're telling me you want to get married? Are you in love with this girl?" "No, but is that girl carrying your baby?" "No, Mama, it's not my baby." "Then you have no reason to marry her." "But Mama, if it's not your baby, it's not your problem." "But what? Now she has to. But what? Now she has to leave Chalice, Holy Chalice, because they do not allow single parents. She has to deal with that, not you. Mama, please. She needs support, and I don't want her to leave school. Did you hear what I said, Jabari? I said no." "Okay. I don't want to have this conversation again. It's been a long and tiring day. I commend you for being unselfish. However, there's nothing you can do but be a friend and not her husband." I don't know what the ingredients they put in this pizza, but this pizza is so choice," Zora says, enjoying her pan pizza. "Newkirk's has awesome pizza, but I think you need to take it easy. You're still in your first trimester," Fabiola suggests. Yeah, I know, but I've been puking my brains out lately. But I can't help myself. This is so good. Do you mind if I have a slice or two? Fabiola asked Ollie, feeling hungry after having a calzone. Not at all. Just because I'm eating for two doesn't mean I'm stingy. Wait, you just ate a calzone and you're still hungry? Yeah, but I haven't had breakfast. Why didn't you eat breakfast? You know me, constantly on the go. That's not good. You know breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Yeah. So, what's going on with you and Senor Montague? Nothing. Have you heard from him lately? Yeah. He asked if I was okay. Aw, he likes you. No, he does not. We're friends. He's like my brother. A cousin. No, he's like a second cousin. Who you can date? Fab, that's gross. No, you said that Jabari is like a brother or a cousin or whatever, but he's not. You guys are nowhere near related to each other. I think you should make it official with him. Quit being matchmaker. It's not going to work. All right. I'll stop. Zizi, what's up? Zora replies between bites of her pizza. I bumped into Tony the other day. Zora paused. Oh, you did? What did he say? He said that he still loves you and he wants to be with you. Well, he can't be with me. Well, he can't be with his wife and me. You know what? Anton has some nerve. Okay. It's cool. I didn't mean to get you upset. Besides, it's no good getting upset in your condition. Anyway. However, I want you to know, Tony does not love this girl. He doesn't even like this girl. So why are they getting married? The marriage is arranged by their parents. Oh. Wow. Well, it doesn't matter. Tony and I can't be together anyway. It doesn't matter. Tony and I can't be together anyway. It doesn't matter if we're still in love with each other and that we're having a baby. Did you tell him I was pregnant? No, Zora. It's not my place to tell him about your pregnancy. Tony, however, did invite Isaac and me to his engagement party. He said it's an open invitation, so it's not an obligation, you know, considering the circumstances. Zora smiles and asks, Fab, are you asking for my permission to go to Anton's engagement party? Yeah, replies Fabiola shyly. Girl, please. You don't need my permission to go to this party? I don't? No. You're your own person. No, you're your own person and you make your own decisions. Besides, this situation has nothing to do with you. This is between Anton and me. Well, that's a relief. They both laugh. Zora starts, We have known each other since forever. I don't doubt my friendship with you. You're my best friend. That's exactly the reason why I was so apprehensive of going to this engagement party or pre-engagement, whatever. Anyway, I didn't want to betray you. See, this is why we're best friends, and I love you. Oh, Oh, okay. That's that. Now here's another dilemma. What now? What am I going to wear? Zara and Fabiola laugh. I don't know. I mean, in your case, it's up to you. You can go modern or traditional. Well, I never dressed in their traditional attire before. It would be interesting. It's only a one-time thing. So go modern. The Braganza family will understand, trust me. Besides, an entire traditional dress can run for maybe about over $200. Yeah, I'll go modern. So, when is the big event? In a couple of weeks from now. Good, we have ample time. That evening, Fabiola gives Isaac a phone call. Hello? A woman's voice answers. Hello? Doña Luisa Oida? Soy yo, Fabiola. Fabiola, mi amor, ¿cómo estás? Bien. May I speak to Isaac? Sure. Seconds later, Isaac comes on the phone. Hey, baby. Isaac greets. How's everything with you? Good, good. What's up? I wanted to ask you if you still want to go to Tony's pre-engagement or engagement party. Tony's what? He's his pre-engagement party, I think. Damn, that was fast. This family's practically pushing him into marriage. What about Zora? What about her? Did you talk to Zizi about it? Yeah, Zora said that she doesn't care. What? Get out of here. I'm for real. Zora helps me pick out a fly outfit. Isaac laughs. What's so funny? Fabiola asks. Mr. Creamy must be in hell because it has frozen, he says jokingly. I know she said that she didn't care. But I know it's breaking her heart. Zora still loves Tony. And she probably wishes she was the fiance instead of that girl. Are you sure you want to go to this thing? You sound as if you're having doubts. Yeah, I'll go. Tony may have broken my best friend's heart, but he's still my friend, and the situation is between Tony and Zora. Okay, it's settled. Now, if we're going to this engagement party, my girl cannot be the only one looking fly. So you want to go? Yeah, I'll go. Great. I'm pretty sure you'll have no problem finding something in your closet. Yeah, you're right. They both laughed. Let's go, Raquel calls to her children as she places her earring into her ear. Your father's waiting in the car and I don't want to be late. After placing her earring in her ear, Raquel smooths her tightly pinned up hair and checks her makeup. She makes sure that her pink Georgia ankle length suit looks flawless. She slightly fixes her traditional gold Kundan jewelry, which also complements her outfit. Raquel's daughter, Monica Braganza, who looks just as regal as her mother, comes into her parents' bedroom struggling with her green printed gorget sari. Mommy, could you help me fix my sari? Monica asks. Oh, goodness, Raquel replies, fixing her daughter's sari against her shoulders. Where is your brother? I think he's still in his room. Anton, I hope you're fully dressed. I don't want to be late for this function, Raquel calls to Anton. Anton, do you hear me? Anton is in his room, but he is staring at his reflection. His reflection wears a cream jacquard ready-made karta with Shandar. Sorry, guys. Traditional Indian attire. He looks incredibly dashing, yet Anton is disgusted with himself. I hate this, Anton thinks to himself. I should be dressed like this for my Sonia Zora. I miss her so much, but she hates me. His eyes begin to get misty over his ex-girlfriend, but he quickly pulls himself together. No, no, Anton, he thinks to himself. No more tears. Even though it hurts, you must be strong. I may marry another woman, but Zora will live in my heart forever. Anton, Raquel interrupts, are you decent? Yes, mommy, I'm ready. Well, come on, your daddy is waiting for us. Meanwhile, Fabiola Castillo and Isaac Gonzalez is riding in a taxi to the pre-engagement party at the ballroom. This is pretty exciting, says Fabiola. What do you mean? I mean, this is not an ordinary pre-engagement party. Ordinary? You know, American. Oh, well, it should be fascinating. Do you think it'll be choreographed like that, like a Bollywood movie? You watch those? Sure, Isaac laughs. They have subtitles, Isaac. That way I could understand what is going on in the movie. Plus, I get inspiration for my designs. Isaac says through his laughter, you're too funny. They arrive at the ballroom. Isaac and Fabiola step out of the taxi like movie stars on their way to a premiere. Isaac's hair is slicked back and shiny. He wears a teal green suit with his sleeves rolled up. The black button-down shirt and the leather shoes complement his suit with a gold touch from his chain. His chain, watch, and ring. His girlfriend, Fabiola, looks just as eye-catching as her date. With her dark, bouncy curls swooping to the side, Fabiola wears a Victor Costa soft pink cocktail dress with matching high heels. The dress consists of a sweetheart neckline, fitted waistline, three layers of ruffles, and a zippered back closure with a giant pink bow. However, the pink bow is nothing compared to her pink ice and Cuban zirconian fashion jewelry, which makes her attire pop. Do you have the invitation? Fabiola asked as she held her boyfriend's arm. Yeah, baby. Isaac assures her, it's in my inside pocket. As they walk closer to the ballroom building, they notice a lot of people. Wow, Isaac exclaims. Wow, indeed, Fabiola agrees. There's so many people here. Yeah, I can tell by the cars. I hope they do not look at us funny. Why would you say that? Well, we're not dressed like them. Baby, it does not matter how we dress. We look great. You look beautiful. Thanks, mi amor, she replies with a kiss. They walk towards the double wooden doors, which were the main entrance. When Isaac opens the door, the couple enters the foyer, which is illuminated with pendant lighting. The flooring is made of hardwood. One side of the foyer has an antique mirror with matching antique wall lamps on both sides. Under the mirror is a wooden four-door cabinet. On the other side of the foyer is an antique painting. The two antique wall lamps complement the art as well as the three accent chairs. Then Isaac opens one door of the other pair of double wooden doors, which opens to a long hallway of doors. Behind each door is a ballroom. A long row of crystal chandeliers illuminates the hall. It shows the antique beauty of the Victorian wallpaper. The carpeting is so soft, it feels like walking on clouds. The couple happens to meet with a few of the guests that happens to be conversing in the hallway. They gladly direct Fabiola and Isaac to the ballroom, which holds the pre-engagement party. Once Isaac opens the door to the hall for his girlfriend, one relative greets the both of them. As the Braganza family drives to the ballroom, Anton stares at the window. He is in another world of apprehension, regret, betrayal, sadness, and emptiness. Monique watches her brother. She is anxious about him. Anton? Anton? Monique calls to him, tapping on his shoulder. Anton turns to his sister. What is it? Anton asks, feeling somewhat annoyed. Are you okay? Yeah, why do you ask? You don't look happy. Of course I'm happy. I'm about to meet my new wife for the first time. There was a dead silence between the two siblings until Monique comes up with a thought. If I was meeting my new husband, I would feel the same as you. Yeah, right. You have no idea how I feel. No one will ever know how I feel. What's going on back there? Agnello asks while maneuvering through the busy, crazy street. Nothing, Daddy, says the children. There's another short pause between Anton and Monique. Anton feels terrible about snapping at his younger sister. How could she understand his situation? Monique doesn't have a clue. I'm sorry, Monique. I just have a lot on my mind, Anton apologizes. Yeah, I see, Monique replies. I didn't mean to upset you. I guess I don't know. Anton looks at her and says, no. They finally reach the ballroom. There were so many cars, Agnello had a hard time finding a parking space, but eventually he saw one. I know we were going to be late, Raquel says with worry. Don't worry, dear Angelo says to Raquel. We're fine. It is good to keep the crowd in suspense. Agnello gets out of the car first to open the door for his wife. Sorry, guys, for the pause. Anton's apprehension grows more poignant as he gets out of the car. He walks with his family to the double wooden doors, which are in the main entrance. The Braganza family happens to meet with a few of the relatives that happens to be conversing in the hallway. They gladly direct the family to the ballroom, which holds the engagement party. Once Agnello once opens the door to the hall for his family, one relative happily greets the family. Hey, everyone, the relative announces. The groom and his family has finally arrived. Everyone cheers. Friends and family from the city, other parts of the country, the UK and India, come for this great and lovely occasion. Everyone wears their traditional attire. It looks like a scene from the Bollywood movie. The guest greets the Braganza family with kisses and hugs. They slowly walk their way to the front where the bride's family sits in front of the ballroom. Some are crying because they are so happy for Anton and his engagement. Anton, however, pretends that he is pleased, allowing himself to be showered with affection by his well-wishers. All right, everyone, Agnello announces with his hands in the air. Kindly let him pass. They give Anton and his family room to sit at their table, which was directly next to the Pankar family, the bride's table. The mother, Magdu, the father, Pedro, and their two brothers, Salvador and Montes, and their older sister, Mari, sits regally in their traditional Kundan jewelry and colorful traditional attire at their table. They are thrilled to see him. They are thrilled to see him as he sits in his seat. Anton feels nothing but total unhappiness. "Do not worry, future son-in-law," Magdupankar says, reaching towards him with a warm smile. "You are marrying a wonderful girl." Strangely, Anton feels more at ease. It is not something she has said, but how she said it, as if she knows how he feels. He looks at her with a smile. "Thank you," Anton replies. It is almost time for the bride to make her grand entrance to meet her future husband. The guests sit at their tables. The tables are split in the middle. The bride is ready to make her entrance. When everyone is seated, the lights begin to dim. The lighting shines in front of the stage. Dancers from the right and the left of the ballroom suddenly come dancing in front of the guests. The performance is beautiful. They dance gracefully in unison with their blue langra and matching silver kandan jewelry. Then the dancers form a clearing for the double doors. A spotlight shines on the double doors. The announcer declares, "Mr. Anton Braganza, we are proud to present to you Nanalin Pankar, your future bride," announces the DJ. When they open, a figure draped in a purple langra, complemented with gold jewelry, enters the ballroom. Everyone's attention focuses on her. Nanalin strolls as the music plays softly in the background. As she walks towards the front of the hall, everyone is astonished by Nanalin's regal beauty. Anton watches his future bride walk closer to him. He is very nervous. He looks at Nanalin like she's the Grim Reaper. She stops in front of the stage, presenting herself to her future husband. Raquel urges Anton to meet with his future wife. He gets up, strolls off the stage, and strolls to Nanalin. There they are, standing face to face. They give each other a faint smile. Anton puts out his hand, and Nanalin takes it. "The couple will now have their first dance," announced the DJ. Although they are incredibly nervous, Anton takes his future bride by the hand and guides her to the dance floor. "Love Zone" by Billy Ocean begins to play in the atmosphere. The disco ball spins gracefully, illuminating its shine throughout the ballroom. "Ew, his hands are so sweaty," Nanalin thinks to herself. Anton wraps his arm around Nanalin's back while she wraps her arm around his neck. They commence their slow dance. "Nanalin is so beautiful," Anton thinks to himself. "I hate to let my Zora go, but she has let me go. Maybe I should get to know Nanalin at least. Who knows? I might grow to like her." Nanalin is just as apprehensive as her future husband. "I'm not ready to get married," she thinks to herself. "I don't care if this is part of my culture." She takes a look at Anton Braganza. "This could be worse, perhaps. This bloke could be beastly," Nanalin thinks to herself. "I guess it would not hurt to get to know Godis bloke. Who knows? I might fancy him." That concludes chapter 3 of Chalice, the Book of Life. Please tune in to the next chapter, chapter 4. This is Aja Pearl from the world of Aja Pearl. It's my world, and I am so happy you're here. Have a good night.